My name's Richard Gabe. I'm a member of Al-Anon. Morning, everybody. I'm not going to lie, I tell you I'm not nervous, because every time I get up here and any time in front of people, I just get nervous. So my voice kind of shaky, and I looked at the clock. I did this in South Carolina one time, and it was one of those odd meetings that didn't start really when it was supposed to, and took the watch up, and halfway into the talk, I looked down, and I knew what time it was, but I didn't know what time I started, so not, you know. So I have looked at my watch. I want to thank the committee. This is just marvelous. I told them many years ago, back in the early 60s, I used to travel up and down this highway, and I was paying my own expenses, and I was telling the group on the way down, I knew every $6 motel with a color TV in this part of the country. And believe me, the Holiday Inn on the coast here was not a $6 motel even back then. And I said, boy, one day it sure would be nice to stay there. So thank you so much for having me. This is it's really beautiful. And I will settle down any minute now. And I tell a couple of stories on myself. I am an Al-Anon, as I told you. And you can see I'm a male. And back when I came, and let me settle a few things for you, because when a speaker gets up here, there's always, I always do some mental calculations. How old are they? And let me settle a few things for you. I'm 47 years old. My wife, this is Lindsay. Stand up.
No.
I'm on my back. They're still independent too, eh? I'm going to be telling some of Lindsay's story this morning. I didn't get here. I got here because I love an alcoholic. That's what caused all the screw-ups in my life. And I love her very much, and I love her more today than I ever have. And she's real special to me. I also had a driver bring me down, and Harold and Jenny I from Marietta, Georgia. And it was a special trip to come down, because we had a meeting all the way down. And I don't think we fought at all, and it was a good trip. A little bit longer than we thought coming down. Anyway, now that I've settled all that, I was unique when I came in. When we came in, Lindsay's going to celebrate her 15th birthday in September, so we've been in a few years. And the area I came to is Gwinnett County in Atlanta, which is kind of the, it used to be kind of the country part of Atlanta, but it's grown up now. But and we were talking at breakfast this morning. We were 32 years old when we came into this program, and up where we are, we were the young people coming in. We were the cute couple that all of a sudden came into the program, and we were real young. So we were, and then again, there weren't a whole lot of female alcoholics up there. So we were kind of, we say we're not different in this program, but by gosh, we treat people different in this program, and that's just the way it works, because human breaks out in us. So, but I was a guy, and they decided I needed to speak one night. So we had this meeting, and back in the mid-70s, to have a meeting at a Baptist church up where we are was really unusual. And they asked me to speak in the basement of this church. Now, when you get old country churches, they don't have real fancy podiums. What they take is a 4x4, and they nail some 2x4s on the bottom, and they nail a plank on the top of it, and that's the podium. And I got so nervous while I was talking, and it's a big crowd. I think there were 5 people, and they all knew me. They knew me better than I knew me, and I was telling my story in front of these people. And about halfway through it, I realized my right leg had wrapped itself around that pole, and it wasn't real sturdy, and it wasn't hidden like my feet are hidden. So when I wrap my leg around something, you aren't even going to see it. I'd wrap my leg around it, but show you what kind of shape I was in. I was going to try and figure out how I was going to get my leg back around that pole without anybody noticing it. So, and of course, all these thoughts are going along while you're seeing something else out of your mind. So, and I want to tell you, I haven't come a whole lot farther than I did then. So I don't know. I don't know what you're going to hear this morning. I'd like to say this thing's all planned out, but it's not. If you've heard my tape before, maybe you're going to hear what I said then, and maybe it's going to be a totally different person. I had a good friend a few years ago in this program named Ken Knuckles. Some of the older folks around might remember. Ken was real special to me, and Ken died, I don't know, it's going to be a weird morning. Ken said, when you get up here, and I talked to Ken, here again I was different, so I got to speak a lot of different places, and it's real easy, too, to get an ego in this thing, and I became an egomaniac for a while. I thought my message was real special, and any time I'm not going to say you, I'll say me. Anytime I think my message is real special, I'm in a lot of trouble. Because then I'll decide I'm going to make it real special. And that's when I really sabotage everything. But Ken told me, I was talking to him about it. He said, I said, I can't understand it, Ken. No matter how many times I do this, I get up here and I'm real nervous. And then all of a sudden I get real calm. And then I sit down, I fall apart. And then after the meeting's over, everybody wants to come up and talk to you. And he said, it's real easy, Richard. When you're there, you're Richard. And when you get up, God takes over and you're calm and it's Him talking. And then you sit down and you take back over. And it made a lot of sense, and I hope that happens this morning. I'll do my best to allow it. Again, made a lot of sense to me, and I'm going to try and tell you what I used to be like and what happened and what I'm like today. But my mind is so scattered right at this minute, I don't know which is going to come first and where it's all going to connect. And if you get it, fine. And if you don't, you want me to try and fix it later. Maybe I can, maybe I won't, because I don't think I remember anything I say up here anyway. Did you get that? It's been a real emotional couple of weeks for me, so I don't know what's going to be going on. And it was a real emotional moment last night. Even though I've been here a few years, and that's good, I've been here long enough to get myself in a lot of trouble. And that's not good, other than I know where the solution is, so I've been fortunate to get back there. They're here. A few years ago, I decided Richard needed to be on the beach. I live in Atlanta, and we got a couple of beaches, but they're man-made, and that's not really what I thought Richard needed, so I manipulated myself into getting down to Mobile, Alabama, and living in a city called Fairhope, and which is a real beautiful city, but what I had brought down was Richard's self-will, and it was a bad deal, and all hell broke loose, and we ended up losing just, well, material everything we owned, and a year later drove back to Atlanta with nothing but a U-Haul van and all our possessions and our kids with us and had to start all over again. And this is after 10 years in this program. And I had a lot of rough memories about Fairhope. And sometimes my memory is very selective. And last night I was sitting here and heard the speaker and it was real nice. And I looked over across the room and I said, that person's familiar. I've seen him before. I know I've seen him before. And then I realized they were in my home group in Fairhope. And Terry drove from Fairhope, Alabama, when she found out I was going to be here, to hear me. And we shared a little bit last night, and you brought back some of the real good things that happened while I was in Fairhope. Thank you. Now I'm going to try and get through this. Let's see, I was born in Atlanta, Georgia. Parents were divorced before I was born. It was, so here I go. I'm different. Today, that's kind of, that's okay. You see a lot of single parents, but back in the 50s, that just wasn't, and 40s, that really wasn't kind of acceptable. They had things like, you don't see this stuff anymore, father and son picnics and all the father and son deals going on, and I didn't get to participate in all those things. I just wouldn't show up. At the age of 12, my mother died of cancer, so I went to live with an aunt and uncle, and my grandmother went with us, and probably at my mother's wake, we're Irish Catholic, I'm going to settle some of those other statistics as I go along, we thought we're the only Irish Catholics to come in this program too when we first came here. We've met one or two others since that time. There was an Irish Catholic wake at when my mother died. And it's funny, I think back, and those of you who haven't experienced one, it might not be a good idea now, but back when you were drinking, it was probably the place to be, because everybody got drunk, and stayed drunk for 3 days, and there was a lot of laughing and crying, and, you know, as things go, it was a real good way to mourn. And I still think it's, probably without the alcohol, it's probably a good way to do it because we laughed and cried and did all those things. But the drinking didn't really... What I'm getting at is getting drunk and doing all the things that you do when you're drunk was acceptable behavior. So it wasn't any news to me. I didn't like God when that happened. And I had a grandmother that was a very spiritual person. We'd get a picture of her back in the 50s reading her Bible on Daytona Beach. So I believe that was the first and last occurrence of that on Daytona Beach. And but that's the kind of grandmother I had, and she raised me. And But I got mad at God when this happened because I just didn't like that. My mother had died, and I never really accepted it, and it was real painful to me. So I became a very difficult person. I was talking about the rules last night. I kind of obeyed all the rules, but the people I wanted to be with were the people that didn't like the rules, and that's the group I hung around. There were a bunch of drinking going on in high school and probably doing a lot of the stuff I shouldn't have done, but that's the crowd I wanted to be with. On the other hand, it's not the crowd I wanted to be with because they did some things that I didn't want to do, but I wanted to be accepted by them, so I hung around the drinking. And here again, that was acceptable behavior. Whatever they did was fine with me. Went away to college and came back with my roommate, and he had been dating a girl a long time, and we went over to his girlfriend's house. I just kind of hung around him. He'd take me wherever. I was real shy, so he'd take me a lot of places I wouldn't go myself, so I hung around him a lot. He took me over to his girlfriend's house, and she was doing a girl's hair, and her hair was all done up. That's when they frosted, and anyway, they had tin foil and all that stuff in her hair, and that was Lindsay. And now, I want to tell you that we fell in love at first sight and went off on our merry way, and that's not really the way it worked, because I was afraid to ask her for a date, and she kind of... She wouldn't do anything like this, but she did some manipulation. And anyway, we finally got a date. And I know, I don't remember the first date, but I'd say odds were on. There were at least one and maybe two six-packs in the car when we went off on the date. Lindsay could drink. Oh, gosh, could she drink. And in a way, that was kind of nice because she kind of fit in with a crowd of guys. And we worked on cars on a weekend, and she'd come over and sit there and drink beer with us while we worked on cars. On the other hand, it got pretty expensive. It's expensive dating an alcoholic, I gotta tell you. I fell into a bad case of heat and we got married. I thought it had to do with love, but I guarantee you, I knew not the first thing about love when I was 21 years old. It just seemed like a good idea at the time. We were halfway living with each other, and here again, that's not something you did in the late 50s, early 60s. That's just not the way things work. So we had joint checking accounts and all that, so we just got married is what it was. Very quickly, and I remember working at a gas station when I was a kid. I used to help the gas station up the corner, and they let us work there for nothing. He wouldn't pay us, but we could work on our cars up there. And I remember these guys would drive in with station wagons full of kids, and I'd say the bad word. That's never going to be me. Well, about 4 years later, I had a Volkswagen with three kids in the back. Couldn't afford a station wagon. That word still gets me in trouble today. So anyway, along with Lindsay came somebody else, Lindsay's mother. I didn't like that woman. In fact, I guess you could say I had a pretty good case of hate, and I had a way of turning cold, real cold. When they talk to you, you don't respond, or you respond in very short answers. I guess rather than cold, maybe indifference is the way it was. See, Lindsay's mother was an alcoholic, and I knew her when she was drunk. We got married in November. In February, Lindsay's mother died, found AA. Now, she was 13 years sober when she died, and that's pretty much of an accomplishment today. I kind of listen to people with 13 years of sobriety. And I never treated that woman any different from the first day I met her drunk until the day she died. I never changed. Today, I miss the fact that I missed some good sobriety because she was a good member of this program. Really was. And I think about it because, you know, you get in this program and all of a sudden you get some knowledge and you start fighting with people in the program about how the program's supposed to be worked. We fought so much during those years. I could see us today getting together and lasting maybe 5 minutes before we're fighting over some tradition or something somebody said or the way things are supposed to work. That's probably the way we'd be today, except I think I'd have some more respect and love for her. Anyway, I didn't like her, so we had Alcoholics Anonymous in the family. And not only did she get sober, but her sister got sober, and Dot's sister got sober, and Dottie's mother, Lindsay's grandmother, got sober. So here we got AA going. And I forgot to tell you something, Lindsay's my cousin. You see, with Irish Catholic families, when anything real bad happens, like divorce horror back then, they just kind of cut that family off from the family. They didn't even exist. That's how I learned a lot of this indifference. And Lindsay and I started dating, and come to find out when we announced to the whole family we were going to get married, they said, "You're cousins." So it had to do with the divorce, and I think we're third cousins. So, God, we had to go to the Pope and get special dispensation to get married. And I tell you what, our marriage certificate's it's official. I guarantee you it's official. Got everybody's signature on it. Once the Pope said it was okay, my grandmother said it was okay, so we'd get married. You know, the drinking we did was fun. There were a lot of bad things that happened, but it was fun. It was our social life. I drank a lot. I didn't have it, though. Now, I got drunk, and I got drunk on a regular basis with all the friends in high school, and we went out and partied, and I'd get drunk. And like I say, that was acceptable social, but there's something in me that won't take me over it. I don't know what it was, but it wasn't any problem giving it up. And I got some friends in the program today that say I'm on the wrong side. Who knows? Anyway, all of a sudden, you know, Lindsay's drinking had gotten bad, and we just couldn't live together. We separated 3 times in this program, couldn't live apart, couldn't live together. Went through just about everything in those years. Once all the kids were grown, she got a job outside selling. And Lindsay is drinking the bars. And that I didn't like. All of a sudden, she started going out drinking more, and I would stay home and be responsible for the kids more. Now, I'd like to tell you the reason I was responsible for the kids is I'm a responsible person, but that has absolutely nothing to do with it. That had to do with manipulation, and I'll show you how people are supposed to act, what a role model I was. But that's what it was all about. And she spent her time drinking in bars. And we split up, and there were all kinds of horror stories that went on. But I want to get into some recovery. But there were a couple of things that happened that were interesting during those latter years. It always seems like a good idea. I got to be careful. I got a thinker in my head. And that thinker caused me a lot of trouble during the drinking years, but I think it causes me more trouble today because I think I know the good things for me sometimes. I listen to this thinker. Well, the thinker told me, why don't you just go out and drink with them and get to know them? And that's the way to solve the problem. So Lindsay invited me to one of her bars and invited me over there for lunch with him. So I was over there at lunch drinking with him. Well, I wasn't drinking. I didn't drink during the day, see, because I had to go back to work. And they're all drinking, and I had some food, and I met a few of them, and they said, we're going to meet back here at 5 o'clock. And it was right around the corner from my office. Why don't you just come on meet us back here? That's a good idea. And I was a part-time hippie. Now, a part-time hippie kind of got a little long. It was funny. It was shorter than it is now, but I had longer hair for back then and a mustache and a beard. And I drove a Volkswagen van, but I worked a straight job 5 days a week. And at night, I'd put on sandals and blue jeans, and I was a hippie. And that's, but the Volkswagen van was real special to me because that was my connection with the hippie crowd. So I was driving a Volkswagen van, and we just bought Lindsay a new Datsun, a little peppy little job, and that's what she drove. So I showed up at the bar that night, and just to show you, I didn't realize this until a few years in the program when I began to look at it, but I showed up at the bar. It turned out that they'd never left, which is, that's what they were supposed to do, was to stay there. And by the time I got there, everybody's laughing and cutting up and joking, and there's probably 10 or so people there. And I sit down at the table, and 5 minutes later, there's only 2 of us left at the table. That's the kind of influence I was when I showed up around a group of people. And next thing you know, it was Lindsay and I at the table, and less than 5 minutes later, it was me at the table. I'd said something real smart, and Lindsay had gotten mad, and she was going to drive home. Well, my keen thinking, of course, there's got to be a sane one in the group, and I knew I was the sane one in the group. She's drunk. She can't drive home, not in 5 o'clock traffic in Atlanta. And even in the 70s now, there was some bad traffic in Atlanta. It's worse today, but there's some bad traffic. This was right close to downtown. So Lindsay jumped in her car to drive home. I watch a lot of movies. I know how it's done. I jumped in my car. And it seemed like a good idea that I could stop her, but they do it in movies. But it's real hard in real life when people are in two different automobiles for you to control what the other person's doing. And when they're in a new car, and if you've been in a Volkswagen van, you know they are not the fastest thing in the world. Best thing to put in a Volkswagen van is a good sound system, because you're going to go slow and you might as well listen to some music. But anyway, she's headed out for the expressway, and I'm behind her. And I'm watching, and I'm saying, she's drunk, I can see the car swerving, and there's traffic. I don't know what I'm going to do when I catch her, but I knew this script's playing out in my mind that I'm going to save her, and, you know, you play these weird thoughts over in your mind. But anyway, the reality was, she's there, and I'm here in this car. And I look up, and I see this thing swerving, and all of a sudden, she hits a lamppost, the left-hand side of the car, and she sideswipes a lamppost, swerves back across this way, goes across three lanes of traffic, 5 o'clock traffic in Atlanta, and whips back in a right-hand lane and goes straight down the expressway. Mixed emotions. You remember that joke about mixed emotions? I had those mixed emotions. And the first one was, she's going to die and it's going to be over. That will solve my problem. Then you look at your new car that's crashed, and then you realize that the person in there, I don't want to say I loved her, but I cared about her, and she could have been killed. And now, all this is going through your head, and you're still driving a car trying to chase a car down. It's exhausting being around this illness. Just talking last night about the adrenaline. God, I think about those rushes, and I think, gosh, I'm missing so much fun today with what we used to do. She got off the expressway, and I'm still chasing. And we're in 5 o'clock traffic, and this is like a four-lane road going down there. And she got stopped at a light. And I pulled up behind her, and I throw the emergency brake on. I knew how to do the acting, too. And you throw the brake on, and you whip the door open, and you run up to the car, and the door's locked, and the window's up. And I'm here again, you gotta do a lot of things at once. I mean, you're looking down at the car, and the side of it's just torn up. And you're looking at her, and she's looking straight ahead at the light. And knocked on the window, and the light changed, and she's gone. And I'm blocking traffic, and I'm about 10, 15 feet from my Volkswagen. And people didn't like hippies back then anyway, and they knew what it was. And they're blowing their horns and screaming at me, and I'm trying to tell them, it's not me that's got the problem. It's her that's got the problem. And they didn't care. But remember that cold, indifferent side of me. That's part of me today. And the deal I had was, we're not fixing the car. You drive it the way it is. And she drove it the way it was until we traded the car. And I wanted it to be a constant reminder that she did that. And it was her fault. That's kind of the way I operated, because that's safe, see. It's not me. I never do anything wrong. See there? She wrecked the car, and she was drunk when she did it. And I'd take all these frustrations out on my kids, too. I had three beautiful sons, and like I say, they were real close together. And they're close together now, but they're grown close together. We've been married 26 years, another statistic for you. Back in November, we celebrated our 26th anniversary, and our children are older now, and some of them have been in Alateen. We've got one that's going to celebrate his fourth birthday in AA, and he's real special to us. In fact, it'll be Monday night he'll celebrate, and that's real nice to have your child. It's not nice to have him in the illness, but it's nice to have him in recovery, so we're real proud of him. I got two more out there that... Oh, God, love them. It's scary to have them out there like that, but we love them. And I was rough on those children. I remember since my wife wasn't there, she was out drinking, I'd take the frustration I had out on my children. And I used to say it was all mental, and it wasn't physical, but I used to discipline those children, and I used to use a heavy hand on them, and it was not, it didn't have really a whole lot to do with discipline. It had to do with my frustration with the illness of alcoholism, and I used to spank them very severely when I was frustrated at my wife sometimes, and I had to make amends for them, and that's the beauty of this program, is you can make the amends, and I get a twinge whenever I see a child spanked today because I remember the, what I used to do and how I used to do it. But they're good kids and I love them. We progressed on from that point. More adrenaline. Right towards the end of Lindsay's drinking, and it's amazing. I heard Mary Pearl talking last night, and our stories in some ways come real close together because I used to hang around with a lot of drinking people. And we used to fight. It was, a good day was one fight, I guess. A bad day is when you fought more than one time. But if you only have one fight in one day, that was a success. And gosh, that's not even in the cards today. That's not the way things work. It's a wonder that we made it through all that. And it's a grace of God that we made it through it. I don't know how you do it with alcoholism. But anyway, it was Halloween in 1975. And Halloween was a big deal at our house. We got pictures of the kids growing all the way up in all our costumes and everything. We'd dress the kids up and go out, and we'd go out with them. And I got home. Lindsay wasn't home. And so I'm going to get the kids ready. And I wanted to do it real quick. I wanted to make sure they were in their costumes before she got home so I could tell her how long I'd been there and worked on this. That's the way my head worked. Amazing. It's exhausting to have to think about all these things, too. She came home, we had a fight, and she left, which was not unusual for us. That was the pattern. She come home, fight, I'm going out, okay, go, get out. What the hell did I say that for? Now she's gone, now I'm trying to figure out where she is. Let me go find her, and finding somebody in a bar in the city of Atlanta is a real trip. Might be okay in Fort Walton Beach, but there's a lot of them in Atlanta, and you can waste a lot of gas. Anyway, Lindsay went out, and I got a phone call about 10 o'clock that night, and they said, Lindsay's in the hospital. She's had an overdose. And she had gotten drunk, and she'd taken a bottle of pills, and they were pumping her stomach in the hospital, and there we go again, and I feel it. And she's going to die, and when she dies, my problem's going to be over with. They're going to say, oh, what a great person you were at the funeral, and you're so strong, and all these nice things to me, and here's this dead person laying in there, and it's over. All the problems are gone. I used to say there's a hook on the wall, and there's a big old hook, and it's called alcoholism. And any time I had any kind of problem at all, I just stuck it up on the hook and walked away. I didn't have to worry about it until I quit drinking, and then the hook disappears, and all the stuff hits the floor. Anyway, Lindsay's laying in the hospital, and they let me in the room to see her because I don't know why they let me in the room. But anyway, we're looking down at her, and there's a doctor laying there, and he says, you got it. Two choices. You can go home or you can go to the mental health, the nut ward over there. She looked at me and she chose the nut ward. This is where we come in this program. At 5 o'clock in the morning after we've been up all night going through these great experiences we've been through, we're sitting down talking to this counselor. Back then, I don't know what it's like today, but back then they had it wasn't 20 questions. It must be 200 questions they asked you when you checked into this place. One of the questions was, and you got to it, do you drink? And the cute couple sits there, and they look at each other, and they say, socially. She was in for overdosing because she was drunk, and she'd been drunk for days and days and days, and both of us sitting there saying, only socially. So they locked her up. We were a big member of Little League football at this time. And Lindsay doesn't just join. Lindsay involved. Lindsay's in charge of the fundraising, and she knows everybody. Second day she's there, she knows everybody in the place. That's great until something happens. So I show up at the football game the next day, and the first question out of everybody's mouth when we're not together is, where's Lindsay? The thinker went into real action at this point. Her mother's dying of cancer, and everybody knew your mother was sick, and she had to fly out to Houston last night, and I put her on a plane. That seemed like a good idea at the time. Then they start asking questions, so you got to lie a little bit more. And then little leagues do what little leagues do. We've taken up a collection, and we've got some flowers. Where do we send them? Somebody in Houston got some flowers, and I hope they enjoyed them because that was part of the lie. And all of it was in here. Carried it all, made up all the stories, went home at night. When the lights went out, you lay there and say, why me? Why am I doing all this? And the thinker gets going again. It's a screwy situation. Me thinking of myself today is trouble. Today is trouble. If I don't share it, I'm the craziest person in this world talking to myself. Lindsay decided when she sobered up in that place that she didn't like it. The hospital interviewed her and thought that's maybe where she needed to be. But I'm the protector, see. Now, I got to tell you this. We went into a place not long ago, I think it was, we were talking about it. And they got a key, and they unlocked the door, and they let you in, and then they locked the door behind you. They didn't put a badge on me, one of those ones that says visitors. We were talking about this last week. I wouldn't say a word in that place. I thought somebody might be over the shoulder listening and say, whoops, this one's not going. We got the wrong one. This one's staying. Let that one out. So I wanted a badge when that door locked that said, let this person out. I talked to the doctor. Lindsay said she wanted out. I was going to get her out. I went through this James Bond thing about how I'm going to break her out of this place. I spent days on that, this fantasy of mine. Anyway, she just walked out one day, and I went to pick up the kids, and Lindsay had a drink before the kids came home so she could face the kids. But it wasn't a problem. See, my mother-in-law was an alcoholic. Lindsay just drank too much every now and then. She wasn't an alcoholic because my wife couldn't be like my mother-in-law. I hated my mother-in-law, so she couldn't be an alcoholic. And that sounded real good to me, and as long as I denied she was an alcoholic, she wasn't like her mother. So Lindsay went through, and I got a twinge last night when she said that controlled drinking period. Lindsay went through about 9 months of total controlled drinking. She didn't get drunk. Let me tell you what the smart person in the family did. She didn't get drunk in front of me. I knew she was getting drunk. I took, I don't know how many days off from work. Now, I didn't tell anybody I was taking off. This is stealing I did. I was an outside salesman, and I just decided to take the day off, and I followed her. She went to the grocery store, and she stopped by Burger King. But it was fun. It was movie type, because I'd always keep two cars in between us, and I'd... All I did was pick the wrong day. I knew something was going on, but I just picked the wrong day, because I knew I was right. God, that was a miserable period. There's nothing like an alcoholic with no type of recovery that's not drinking. That's real insanity. But after a period of time, I thought, well, maybe this is going to last. So we bought a house. We moved from where we were in Atlanta to Lawrenceville, Georgia, which is about 30 miles up the road, but culturally it's a long way. Day after we closed on the house, which was a Friday the 13th, I'm not superstitious, but the day after closed on the house, Lindsay went out shopping with some friends. She came home drunk. Couldn't take it. All swelled up. And what was happening was the disease had progressed. She took a couple of drinks and went into a blackout. And I couldn't take it. I told her I was leaving, and this was about 7 o'clock, and I always left. I wore out a suitcase packing and unpacking it. And I heard a speaker say one time, he used to jump in the car to leave, and he'd say, where am I going? I ain't got any money. I ain't got, you know, where am I going? This is not a good idea. I had a van with a bed in the back. I didn't know where I was going either, so I went up to a rest area on the expressway where the truckers sleep, and I slept in the back of the van. But my mind's working all this time, and I knew Lindsay sleeps late when she drinks. And I woke up at like 6 o'clock in the morning with all the trucks cranking themselves up, and I knew she would be awake. And if I went home and went to bed, she'd never know I was gone. So I drove around Atlanta for about 4 or 5 hours and came home at 11 o'clock and went through this big, dramatic scene. I'm going to leave, and, you know... Gosh, it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of work to write all these scripts all the time. You've got to be real creative to come up with all these ideas. Shortly after that, my wife went to Dallas to see her mother, who was dying at that point. And she came home and got off the plane, and she was drunk when she got off the plane. But you see, I knew she was going to be drunk when she got off the plane because I'm smart. I know what she's drinking. I know exactly what she's going to do. Except she was drunk and said, "I'm going to AA." And I got to tell you, some of you folks might say that's music to your ears, but it was not music to me, because the first thing I thought about was my mother-in-law. Here's this woman dying of cancer, and the only thing I can think of is, my wife's going to turn into my mother-in-law. Not self-centered, I want you to know, I had no problems along those lines. I knew it wasn't going to last anyway, so I ignored it. Well, if you ignore it, it'll go away. And she went to a meeting. And, you know, I used to be jealous. In fact, I was jealous for a long time. My wife used to drink in bars. And if your wife drinks in bars and she's not an alcoholic, now here goes the mind thinking again, and she's not an alcoholic, why is she going to the bars? And she's going to the bars to meet the men. Now, that I could deal with. But I couldn't deal with the fact she was drinking. So she'd come home talking about all these guys she's met at the bars. And that just pissed me off. Now she finds AA. Somebody's been there. She comes home. She talks about Dwight, Bobby Lee, Big John. Not a whole lot changed in my life. I had also found a way to cope with this illness, too, and I decided, being a hippie, that I needed to smoke some of those funny cigarettes, so I used to smoke them every night, and that was the way I'm dealing with that illness. Good, bad, and different, that's what I did. Lindsay found a way to break up a pot party. She came in one night, and my neighbors and I, we were laying on the floor. You don't ever sit up. You got to lay on the floor to... We're laying on the floor with the lights out. That's the way it is. Lindsay comes in and turns on the light and sits on the sofa and said, "I've had a spiritual awakening." They were out of there in about a minute and a half, just cleared the place. I thought my life was bad before. This was bad. This was serious. In all honesty, though, when Lindsay started going to these meetings, and she'd come home and talk about the guys, and I'd get mad. And all that was happening on the surface, but there was a whole lot going on inside Richard. A whole lot. I knew he was crazy. I wouldn't tell anybody he was crazy, but I knew he was crazy. And I knew he needed some help. And I didn't know, so I bought self-help books. God, if I had a nickel for every self-help book I bought. I used to read them. I'd never do anything. They probably got some good things you can do in there, but I wanted to read it and have it happen. Doesn't, and guess what? It don't work that way here either. Guarantee you. I saw something in Lindsay's eye, and it was a little sparkle. And it was the sparkle of the program. And I was jealous of the men she was talking about, but I was more jealous of the sparkle. Because the sparkle says to me, I'm getting better, and when I get better, I'm getting the hell out of here. Because this place is crazy. And there wasn't anything I could do about it. Till she came home one day. It's real special. Real special to me. She invited me to go with her. She never really invited me to go to the bars with her, because I wasn't a nice person to be around. But she invited me to go to the program. And I thought that was real nice, because I was going to find out who Dwight and Bobby Lee and Big John were. You got to know what they look like before you can do anything about it. You got to be able to, you can't attack them if you've never seen them. With fear and trepidation, on Monday night at 7:30, we go walking into this church basement with a coffee pot and a bunch of styrofoam cups in a smoke-filled room with a bunch of people laughing and talking. And here comes Richard. And they'd heard a little bit about Richard. Hey, look, but you know, we talk about spouses and all when you come in the program. I mean, you got to. We didn't get here on our own. And they knew me, and Dwight was afraid of me.
I hid behind a beard and the long hair, and I like to look mean. I'm scared to death inside all that. I'm still a pussycat today. And Dwight kind of backed off from me, but they all patted me on the back and said, "It's good for you to be here." And I thought, maybe this place isn't too bad. And Dwight, he wasn't that big a deal. And Big John was old, and Bobby Lee was, I think he was too country, so I wasn't too worried about Bobby Lee. So I kind of settled down pretty quick when I met all the players and the thing. And then 8 o'clock came, and they said, "Okay, we're going to have a meeting here. You go back in that back room." It had little chairs in it. I'm not talking about little chairs. I'm talking about little chairs. Alcoholics want to get honest sometimes. Sit in one of those little chairs and see how humbling it becomes to prop your chin on your knee. We met in the nursery, and there are a bunch of women in that room, typical. You know, we get so concerned about the newcomer coming in the meeting and what we're going to tell them, and what we're going to say to them, and what we're going to give them. It don't matter. They're going to come back if you tell them you love them, and you ask them to come back. Because they don't know much else, and they haven't been asked a whole lot of places. So if you just say, "Come on back next week," they'll say, "Okay, I'll come back." It's not any big deal. But they went around the room and talked about how crazy they were. And by the time they got around to me, I thought, they are crazy. And I'm going to keep coming because these people need my help. And we held hands, and nobody had held my hand in a long time. We said the Lord's Prayer, and I hadn't said the Lord's Prayer in a long time because I didn't like God. But if that's what it took to stay there, I'd go ahead and do it because that was part of the rules. And this thing hooks you, and after a while you just kind of come in. And she said last night, "Suit up and show up." That's it. Just suit up and show up. And do it. I had to do it a lot. I went to one meeting a week for a while, and then I found out you really got to go to 90 meetings in 90 days, and I kind of overdid it. But you see, I wanted to get rid of this woman I was living with. Now, my thinker went to work, and every now and then my thinker backdoors into this program. I'll think so hard, it gets so painful that I'll just back right into where I'm supposed to be. And if I share these thoughts and somebody guides me through them, they'll kind of push me backwards into the way I'm supposed to be. But my thinker listened to a lot of people in this program, and I heard people come in and say, "This is my third alcoholic marriage." I thought, that's crazy, and that is crazy, but that's the way it is. We're a pot looking for a lid, and the lid's an alcoholic, and I'm going to hook up with them no matter what, and I still do that today. Some of the best friends I got, ever socialized with them, I find out they're drunk. And we get together because of the personality. And I thought, and I finally got together with somebody, and I said, "Wait a minute. Odds are on if I leave this one and go find another one, it's going to be an alcoholic." And they said, "That's right." They'd agree with me. Almost anything I said, they'd agree with me. It was crazy, because nobody ever agreed with me when I said anything before. But they said, "Yeah, that's true." I said, "Well, what would happen if I worked these steps real hard?" And we were told not to make any major decisions for a year. And I took that, and I thought, "Okay, I can handle that." What happens if we work these steps real hard for a year and then go out looking for somebody? Is there a chance that I won't find an alcoholic? And they said, "Yeah, that's a good idea." I said, "Okay, I can do that." They said, "Good, do it." And so my motive for staying in this program, working the steps, was I wanted a divorce. And the folks around me said, "That's good motive. Keep it up. Just don't make any decision for a year." Don't fight, folks. There's no reason to fight anybody if they're not going to do anything except work the steps. Let them work the steps and see what happens. I worked the steps, oh, God. We were a cute couple. In front of you, we were a cute couple. We'd drive to that meeting and get out of the car, and it's a wonder I didn't slam that door all the way through to the other side. It was bam! And you slam the door and you go storming out of the meeting and say, "Hi, how you doing?" "We're doing great." "Best program. This is marvelous. Learned all the lingo. Could talk the lingo. You know, everybody patting you. You're doing so good. What meeting are you going to tonight?" "I'm going over here." "Well, I'm going over here. I'm not going tonight." We go to a separate meeting, separate car. We go to the same meeting, separate car. But going to meeting, fine. Everything is fine. And everybody'd say, good, come on over and sit down. Nobody ever jammed it down my throat. Nobody ever played hard-nosed black belt with me. They loved me. I was reading the Good Old Timers not long ago, and I got a chance to go up to Akron a few years ago and kind of be in the atmosphere of Dr. Bob. And heard Dr. Bob said right before he died, he said, you can sift the 12 steps down into two words, and it's service and love. And that's what this thing's all about. And if service is carrying the message, then we're supposed to carry this message of love to everybody. And that's what was done with me. It was very loving. We had a chance to go to a lot of open meetings. So I got a chance to be around a lot of alcoholics, and I got to hear you and understand you and your illness, and that was real special to me. The AAs were generous enough to share their program with us, and I think that's real nice. At the end of a year, I had come a long way, I guess. I hadn't come nearly as far as I thought I'd come, but I decided it was time to find that person, and I had, and it was Lindsay, and I found out that's the person I loved. I had a chance this past week to share with a newcomer. We went out to dinner Monday night, and this is not a program to solve marital problems. This is not a program to solve financial difficulties. This is a program where we come to learn to understand and live with the illness of alcoholism. In the process, a lot of good things happen. We have a marriage today that is just fantastic. She's my friend and my lover. At times she's my sponsor. At times I sponsor her. We share the program. We just kind of live this thing together, and it's real special. I was sharing with him, and of course he doesn't think he's got any problem with alcoholism. He's got problems with relationships. Who doesn't? But we got to talking, so I decided to share with him. I said, do you love your wife? He said, sure. I said, why? Get quiet. So I thought, if I can ask him that question, I can answer it. And I started sharing why I love Lindsay. And I talked about some of the things we did and how we acted with each other and how we shared with each other and how special that was. And that's a real important result of working the steps of this program. And it's real important to me because we have fun today. And I love this guy to death. I really do. We've known each other a little while, but we're fixing to spend a lot more time together. He said, that's codependent behavior. I said, that's right. That's called love. And maybe it is codependent, but I guarantee you we're having a lot of fun with it. We've been through some real difficult times in this program, and it's amazing how all you have to do is to share and love another human being, and it works. I got to tell you, all of a sudden I told you it was going to be a weird talk. All of a sudden I just went blank. I do want to tell you that everybody I've come in contact, there is nothing like this thing. It has saved my life. It has saved my marriage. Financially, I'm a disaster. And I read stories about people that are that way. There's some phases of my life that just go crazy every now and then. And we just had one of those happen, and another financial setback that I think, oh, my God. And what she said last night about God being able to see around the corner was real important to me, because he can see around corners and I can't. Lindsay talked. We've had a chance to listen to each other a lot when we share, and that's kind of nice because I always hear something different when she talks. And she'll say things, you know, we still play the little games. I got to talk tonight. You don't want to come. You've heard the story before. Yeah, I want to come. So we still play the little game with each other. And she was sharing, and it was one of those real impromptu things because she got a call at like 6:30 that night to talk at 8 o'clock, and she didn't. You know, we got there just before the meeting started. And she started talking, and she said something that I haven't heard in a while. If when I came into the program, somebody granted me the wish of making a list of all the things I wanted, today, looking back, I would have sold myself so short of that list that I've been given in this period of time. And it's true. I didn't dream the things that I have today I would have when I came in. Because when I came in, I didn't have anything. I didn't have a wife or a family. I didn't even have Richard. And I was afraid of the person inside me. And I'm not today. But I'm going to be real honest with you. In the past week, I started the list again. The list of the things I wanted and thought I deserved at this period of my age, at this period in the program. I'd be careful too, because not long ago I was thinking, okay, I've been around this thing about 13 years. You all know I come to the meetings. How about sharing with me the real secret of the program? And they did, and it had to do with those 12 steps. But there aren't any secrets. It's going back to what you did the first time when you walked in the door. But I got to thinking on the way home. I got the opportunity now to... I'm sponsoring another Alateen group. That's my third time around. I don't know pain when I see it. But if you've never taken the opportunity to sponsor a group of Alateens, take the plunge. I'd come out of the meetings at night and I'd scream and holler at Lindsay, why am I doing this? I love those kids, and I started it over again. And I was driving home after the meeting and they said some special things that were real important to me. And I thought about the list that I made when I first came in and realized I was making a list right now after almost 15 years in this program. And I thought, wait a minute, God still loves me and God's not through with me. And I got a feeling that God's got more things in store for me than I've got on the list in front of me right now. So He's got some real special gifts for me that I'm not even aware of. And that's the way the program works for me. I love you. I want to thank you for inviting me, and I hope it meant something to somebody. This weekend's meant something to me already. I love you. Thank you very much.